understand me, but she was tempted once or twice. That's why I built 3PO, to say sorry, and to help her around our quarters when I wasn't there. Irritation forgotten, Obi-Wan smiled. And how often were you late to dinner building that blasted droid? Too often. Recalling his mother's exasperation with his chronic dawdling, how torn she'd get between aggravation and appreciation, he half laughed. She used to say I'd be late for my own destiny. But you weren't, said Obi-Wan. So I suppose there's that to be grateful for. Well, yeah, except the prophecy hasn't been fulfilled yet, has it? There's no balance in the Force. The dark side's winning. Planet by planet, it's creeping across the galaxy, and there doesn't seem to be a thing I can do to stop it.
Except,
prompted Obi-Wan. He shrugged. Nothing. Like I said, I'm really sorry. I know, said Obi-Wan, as he swung their speeder into an exit off the main residential traffic lane and threaded them along a narrower side lane. Besides, I should be used to you by now. At last, they'd reached the residential sector's perimeter. Rising majestically on either side of them were the glossy apartment buildings that were home to some of the Republic's most wealthy and influential citizens. Business magnates, celebrities, politicians, sports stars, aristocrats and their heirs, ambassadors from more than 30 prominent systems. It had made Padme uncomfortable at first, moving into this exclusive community, but Naboo's Queen Jamila and Supreme Chancellor Palpatine had insisted. Naboo's former queen and current senator was a high-risk separatist target. She might not want to live with a level of security second only to the Senate complex, but she needed it. Please, Padme, he'd said, adding his voice to the chorus of common sense, using her love for him against her without hesitation or compunction. If you won't do it for yourself, then do it for me. Do you want me on the front lines worrying about you while I'm fighting to save the Republic? She'd given in, of course. The security that meant so much to his peace of mind slowed their approach to Bail Organa's apartment block. As they traveled the designated visitors lane, they passed numerous discreet checkpoints designed to read and record the speeder's ID. Being Jedi, they encountered no difficulties and eventually docked in the senator's guest parking bay. The visitor's pedway was passcoded. Armed with Organa's private key, Obi-Wan tapped in the sequence, and they were whisked up to level 300. To Anakin's surprise, Organa answered his own front door. Dressed in casual trousers and an open-necked shirt, a glass of red wine in one hand and a kitchen towel tossed over his shoulder, he smiled when he saw them. "There you are," he said, mildly reproving. "I was about to send out a search party. Come on in." "Good evening, Bail," said Obi-Wan, entering the apartment's austerely elegant foyer. "My apologies for keeping you waiting." Anakin followed him inside. "Please, Senator, don't blame Obi-Wan for our lateness. It's my fault. I'm not always the most reliable timekeeper." Organa's smile widened as he closed the door. "So I've been told." He gestured. "This way, we're in the kitchen."
So he'd been told?
Anakin let his accusing gaze slide sideways. "Don't look at me," said Obi-Wan softly as they made their way after Organa. "I've never mentioned you're incapable of..." Oh. Oh was right. They'd reached the kitchen, and standing behind a wide sweep of polished bench, knife in one hand, half-sliced taberut in the other, simply and beautifully clad in a sky-blue silk skirt and blouse, was Padme. One look at Anakin's face, and Padme knew he hadn't had the first inkling she was here. Shock, disbelief, pleasure, and alarm jolted through him in rapid succession, and that meant he hadn't sensed her presence, which wasn't like him at all. Considering her husband closely, she could see why. He was badly distracted and full of unease. His dearly familiar Jedi tunic looked just a little too loose on him, as though he'd recently lost some weight.
"The war's wearing him down. He takes it so personally. He wants to fix everything that's broken. He thinks that's his job." "Master Kenobi," she said, putting down the knife. She met his warily pleased gaze with every feeling masked. "It's good to see you again."
"And you, Senator," said Obi-Wan at his most urbane. I take it you're well?
Very well, thank you. You?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Ah, the commonplace banalities. Where would they be without them? The urge to throw herself into Anakin's arms was almost overwhelming, but she wasn't a career politician for nothing. She offered her beloved an impersonally polite smile.
It's been a while, Master Skywalker. How are you?
Anakin swallowed.
Good. I'm good, m'lady.
I asked Padme to join us at the last minute, said Bail, wandering over to the impressive and immaculate kitchen's other bench. She only got back a few hours ago, which is a stroke of luck for our team. He picked up the opened wine bottle, sloshed some more red into his glass, splashed a bit more into hers, then waggled the bottle at the Jedi. I know you usually don't drink, but courtesy compels me to offer you a glass. Obi-Wan sighed.
You really don't need to, Bail. We don't...
Thanks, said Anakin. I'd love some.
Holding her breath, Padme waited for Obi-Wan to object, to remonstrate, to tell Anakin no.
Instead, he raised an eyebrow. I stand corrected. He'd love some. Grinning, Bail took down another wine glass from the wall-mounted rack beside the small window above the sink. He half-filled it with some of the finest vintage his family's vineyards had ever produced, then handed it to Anakin.
To your excellent health, he said, lifting his own glass in salute.
Anakin returned the gesture.
And yours, Senator.
Why don't you make that Bail? This is my home, after all, not the Senate. Putting his glass down, Bail moved to the cooktop where three saucepans were aromatically bubbling. He lifted the lid on the smallest one, grabbed a spoon, and tasted.
Good. That's good.
Then he glanced over his shoulder. Well, gentlemen, pull up a chair. I'm pretty sure I can manage to cook and talk at the same time. He grinned again.
And you there, kitchen wench, get chopping.
Padme bobbed a sarcastic curtsy.
Sir, yes, sir.
I've got chilled bulby juice in the conservator, Obi-Wan, if you're determined to pass on the wine, Bail added, checking the contents of the next saucepan. Second pressing.
Settling himself on one of the kitchen's tall breakfast bench stools, Obi-Wan nodded.
Perhaps later. Bail, are you sure there's nothing I can do to help?
Ah, Bail said sharply, spoon raised. Set one foot closer to this food, Obi-Wan, and I'll have you arrested.
Bail, she said, surprised.
Anakin was staring too, wine glass raised halfway to his lips.
You don't understand, said Bail, replacing the lid on the third saucepan. He may be a Jedi master, but when it comes to cooking, he's a dirty, low-down spice smuggler. Trust me, I'm doing us all a big favor.
Once, said Obi-Wan over their laughter. Once I had an unfortunate encounter with some minced Moravia, two diced Diplies, and a pinch of Rodian spice.
Once was enough, Bail retorted, emphatic. You just sit there and be wise or something.
More laughter followed. The undercurrent of tension in the room eased. Padme, quickly thin-slicing the rest of the tabaroot, risked a look at Obi-Wan. He smiled back, a shade wryly, sympathy in his eyes now. She lifted one shoulder in swift acknowledgement.
Not your fault. You weren't to know.
Anakin, declining a seat, wandered over to the kitchen's panoramic window. He sipped his wine and stared at the vista of bright lights and streaming traffic beyond the double-shielded transparasteel.
So you've been away, Senator Amma, Padme?
On Chandra-La, yes, she said, layering the tabaroot slices into a baking dish. I wasn't due back for a few days yet, but there was an outbreak of Raltiri measles in the enclave where I was staying.
Quickly, she seasoned the vegetable with salt and pepper and chunks of the butter she'd cubed earlier.
Since there was nothing I could do to help, I came home.
Well, Chandra-La's loss is our gain, said Bail, ever the gallant. Are you done with the taba?
Obi-Wan, I heard about Kothless, she said, handing Bail the dish so he could get it into the compression oven. That was good work, and a lucky escape.
In more ways than one, he said soberly.
Like Anakin, he looked fine-drawn, weary, not as awful as after Zagula or even the battle on Geonosis, but...
The war's beating him down, too. It's so unfair.
Didn't you tell me you don't believe in luck? Said Bail, teasing. Obi-Wan gave him a half-smile. Yes, but too many more last-minute reprieves and I may be forced to change my stance. His wry amusement faded. Speaking of Kothless, Bail, what's the latest from the task force investigating Grievous's attack on fleet communications? Bail closed the oven's door and hit the start button. It's still investigating. They know we can't twiddle our thumbs indefinitely, right? Said Anakin, turning around. They know we can't keep strategically retreating. Yes, Anakin, they know, said Bail, and believe me, everyone on the team is working the problem as hard and as fast as they can. But if the Separatists weren't a formidable foe, well, this war would be done and dusted already, wouldn't it? True, said Obi-Wan, but Anakin's right. We can't afford to lose our offensive momentum. Dooku and Grievous are too skilled at taking advantage of our every stumble. Padme, watching Anakin while pretending to focus on cleaning up her section of the bench, saw his face tighten. She felt his tension reignite.
Oh, my love.
That may be the case, she said, and I know we're here to talk serious business. But I suggest we leave that till after our meal, yes? Bail tells me you're both on furlough for a few days, so why don't we eat, drink, and be merry for a little while, before we tackle the Republic's latest crisis? A warm hand came to rest on her shoulder. Bail. Such a good, dear friend. I second the motion, he said cheerfully. Dinner's almost ready. Why don't you three go through to the dining room? I'll be with you in a few moments. Walking with Obi-Wan, so aware of Anakin behind her, his burning gaze on the back of her neck, she glanced up. Rumor has it you were hurt defending the Spinet facility. Obi-Wan sighed. Is there no shred of idle gossip that escapes your attention?
None. Just tell me there weren't any lightsabers involved this time.
He smiled faintly. Anakin flew to the rescue before that became an issue.
Anakin.
Oh, she wanted to turn and feast her eyes on him. She wanted to hold him and kiss away his cares.
Of course he did, she said, so terribly lighthearted. I believe that's his job description, isn't it?
It is, said Anakin, and I'm starting to think I should ask for a raise. By all means, you can ask, said Obi-Wan at his most droll. Smiling, that undercurrent of tension eased again, they entered Bail's dining room. One entire wall was shielded transparasteel, offering breathtaking views across Coruscant's fantastically lit cityscape. Gleaming silver in the distance stood the Senate building, the symbol of everything they fought for and suffered to protect. As they crossed the lushly appointed room's threshold, soft music started playing from its hidden speakers. She recognized it immediately, the Spring Symphony by celebrated Naboo composer Toffli Argala. She'd mentioned once in passing that Argala was her favorite of all Naboo's music makers. Trust Bail to remember. He knew she'd been homesick of late, having to miss little Pooja's birthday celebrations again. Of course, she'd sent a gift and calmed on that day, but a holographic aunt wasn't the same. Pooja deserved better. M'lady, your seat. Anakin held out a dining chair for her. So old-fashioned, so sweet, so dangerously close to betraying himself. He'd recognize the music, too. There were questions in his eyes.
Oh, my love, don't be silly.
Thank you, she said, sliding onto the chair. The dining table was already set, silverware and low, wide vases of fresh flowers on a filmy white cloth. Anakin's fingers brushed against her arms as he slid the chair into place. She shivered and felt him shiver. She didn't dare look at Obi-Wan already seated.
Does he feel it? He must. Oh, Bail, what have you done?
As though summoned, Bail wheeled a cart into the dining room, laden with their meals and a fresh bottle of wine, clean glasses, and a chilled pitcher of second-pressing Bulby juice. "Masters, m'lady, dinner is served," he said grandly. "Spiced tikrit, steamed yila greens, herbed rice, and baked buttered taba." "What are you doing, Bail?" said Obi-Wan, staring. "What's happened to your server droids? Have they broken down? If they have, you should ask Anakin here to fix them for you. Provided, of course, you've nowhere urgent to be." That had Anakin shaking his head. You're not going to let that one go anytime soon, are you?
Certainly not, said Obi-Wan. Only a fool discards a blaster with some charge left in it.
Warmed, Padme watched her husband and his best friend exchange wicked smiles. It helped her a great deal to know that the difficulties of the past were put behind them, that they'd found such solid ground upon which to stand as equals. She wasn't sure if Obi-Wan understood what he meant to Anakin, how much his regard mattered, how far Anakin would go to keep him safe.
And I can't tell him, but oh, he needs to know.
Feeling the weight of her troubled gaze, Obi-Wan turned, quizzical. Padme? And now she could feel Anakin looking at her. She pretended distraction.
What? I'm sorry.
I thought, nothing, said Obi-Wan with a swift smile. Never mind.
Bail passed around the fragrantly steaming plates, poured the wine and juice, then took his own seat. He raised his glass, his eyes warm with affection. To friends, he said quietly, and an end to this blasted war.
Friends, she and the Jedi echoed and drank.
After that, while they ate, Bail regaled them with the latest gossip from the Senate. They laughed, they poked fun, they dredged up tales long buried and worth retelling, and for a couple of rare, precious hours, the war receded. They were just four friends enjoying fine food and fine company. And pain was a dim memory from a long time ago.
So, said Bail at last, nudging his dessert plate aside. It's been fun, but all good things come to an end. I'm afraid the time has come for us to stop pretending we are not at war. A moment's silence was followed by exchanged glances and soft sighs.
Agreed,
said Padme, dropping her napkin on the table.
But let me clear the table first.
That's all right, I'll take care of it after. She stood.
No, Bail. First rule of the kitchen, the cook never cleans.
I'll help, said Obi-Wan, starting to rise. Actually, Anakin leapt up. Let me... my penance for making us late. Another silence. Awkward this time. Then Obi-Wan nodded. All right. Come on into the study, Obi-Wan, said Bail easily, as though he hadn't noticed a thing. I've got a little show-and-tell set up.
We'll join you there shortly, she said, collecting their used silverware. Don't start without us.
The moment Bail and Obi-Wan were gone, Anakin pulled her to him. He cradled her face in his hands and kissed her like a starving man. She felt her body turn liquid with heat, tasted wine and danger and sweet, sweet safety. And then she pulled away.
Anakin, don't, she whispered, heart pounding. Are you mad? We can't. Not with Obi-Wan here. He'll know. He'll sense. Anakin...
I don't care, he said roughly, his hands roaming her body now, setting her on fire wherever he touched.
I've missed you so much, Padme. Every night I dream of you. It's been too long.
His scorching lips were a blessing and a torment.
I know. I know. But if you won't care, I'll have to care for both of us, she said,
and raised her hands to fend him off.
Anakin, stop it. We'll be together again, just not here, not tonight. Tomorrow. You're on furlough, and I've got a couple of days to myself, too. We'll slip away somewhere. We'll make up for lost time. Please, Anakin, be sensible.
She could feel what it cost him to pull back from the brink, and knew he felt the price she paid for not surrendering. Shuddering, she stood on tiptoe and touched her lips to his once. Lightly.
Come on, let's clear the table, shall we? Like good little guests.
Stepping back, he ran an unsteady hand over his face. I'll clear it, he muttered. You go ahead, you're right. We can't give Obi-Wan reason to suspect anything. Chilled by the thought of discovery, she left Anakin to play busboy and joined Bail and Obi-Wan in the plush apartment study. A table had been pulled into the middle of the room, four chairs arranged around it. Bail and Obi-Wan were already seated, but not side by side, which meant she and Anakin wouldn't be sitting together. Was that deliberate, or simply coincidence? She couldn't read the answer in Obi-Wan's expression. On top of the desk, a sleek holoprojector pulsed gently in readiness.
Anakin's finishing up, she said, aware of Obi-Wan's discreet scrutiny. Fervently hoping the blush had faded from her cheeks, she fished in her skirt pocket and pulled out a data crystal. Here's everything I could find on Lanteeb that I didn't already know.
Bail took the crystal. Excellent. I'm surprised you know anything, said Obi-Wan. I certainly don't. It seems Bail is making a career out of revealing the depths of my galactic ignorance.
How can you say that, Obi-Wan? Said Bail, mock-wounded. I know I'm a politician and therefore beyond hope, but...
I beg your pardon, she said, taking refuge in their nonsense. Her lips were tingling, and where Anakin's desperate fingers had branded her, she burned. Politics is an ancient and noble calling. Without politicians, our societies would descend into anarchy and chaos.
I thought they'd done that already, said Obi-Wan. It certainly looked that way the last time I was in the Senate.
I'm not claiming the system is perfect, she retorted. Obviously, there's room for improvement, when...
A great deal of room, yes. Enough room to house about a dozen Republic warships, I'd say, said Obi-Wan. Possibly 2 dozen, maybe 3.
Oh, well, now you're just exaggerating, she said, annoyed. For every 1 failed political initiative, I can name you 10 that have succeeded beyond all expectations, and...
What am I missing? Said Anakin, entering the study. Anything exciting? Obi-Wan sat back, hands clasped loosely in his lap, his gaze sharpened again. Not really. Senator Amidala was just berating me for my civic ignorance. Between her and Senator Organa, I'm feeling positively wilted. But don't worry, said Bail dryly. He'll survive. And now that you're here, we can get down to business. He patted the chair to his left. Padme? She sat beside him, and Anakin took the remaining chair next to Obi-Wan. He had himself perfectly under control. Bail dimmed the lights with a word, then activated the holoprojector. A 3-dimensional galactic map bloomed above the imager. Bright red and oversized for emphasis, one planet in particular drew the eye. So that's Lanteeb, said Bail in the brisk tone he used to brief the Senate and the Security Committee. The only human habitable planet in the Maelor 77 system. As you can see, it's located more or less equidistant between Ratatak and Bespin, right on the edge of the Outer Rim territories and far off all the major hyperspace lanes. In other words, said Anakin, smack bang in the middle of nowhere. Colloquial, but true, said Bail. Topographically, it's got 3 landmasses, only one of which is inhabited. There's a single spaceport facility in a small city that doubles as the planet's capital. Otherwise, the Lantebans live in widely scattered villages. They're farmers and miners. Nominally, Lanteeb is part of the Republic, but they have no Senate representation, never asked for it. Until very recently, they were a self-governing, independent settlement with no reason for anyone to give them a second look. Just another spinning rock in the unheated wasteland of the Outer Rim. Anakin leaned forward, elbows braced on his knees. And now? Bail frowned. Now they've been invaded, and are an unwilling member of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Do we know why Dooku's taken over? No, we do not. And that's what started my alarm bells ringing. There's no obvious reason why he would. Given its obscurity and distance from anything or anywhere of galactic importance, said Obi-Wan, stroking his beard, how did we learn that the planet has fallen into separatist hands? Bail looked pleased. By happy accident. A gas freighter on the way to Ryun had to drop out of hyperspace to make repairs. A faulty seal in one of the cargo holds. When they went to jump back, they got a proximity warning and were forced to change hyperlane routes. They detected the SEP invasion fleet? That's right.
But how did that lead to the gas freighter's people working out Lanteeb was the fleet's target, said Anakin. And why would its captain care anyway?
Don't tell me, let me guess, said Obi-Wan, smiling appreciatively. It wasn't the captain. We had an agent on board.
Bullseye, said Bail with an answering smile. Ever since Dooku's minions started hijacking Tabana gas shipments, we've put undercover operatives on every freighter. It's only a matter of time before the SEPs strike again, and when they do, we'll have them.
Obi-Wan nodded. Good thinking. Anakin was staring at Obi-Wan. How come you know about this and I don't? Obi-Wan gave him the blandest of looks. I expect you were late for the briefing, Anakin. As Anakin made a face at Obi-Wan and Obi-Wan indulged in a sly, teasing smile, Padme cleared her throat loudly.
And this agent managed to ping a tracker after the Sept fleet?
She surely did, said Bail, briefly amused by the Jedi. And it picked up their comm chatter confirming the Lanteeb invasion.
Which was when exactly? Said Obi-Wan, sobering.
During Dooku's last push through the Outer Rim, which I'm guessing explains why no alarm bells rang any sooner. With four other systems falling at the same time, systems with actual strategic value, Lanteeb got lost in the excitement. Anakin sat back, frowning.
It doesn't make sense. If the Council is right and Dooku's attempting to tighten a belt around the edge of the Republic to keep our forces hemmed in, then why take Lanteeb? The Sept's having control of such an insignificant, out-of-the-way planet makes no difference to the galaxy's balance of power.
Exactly, said Bail. Which is why I asked you here. Between us, we have to work out what his plan is before he can implement it and make our already parlous situation worse. I concur, said Obi-Wan, staring at the holodisplay. So, Lanteeb, has it got anything worth stealing? What is its agricultural output? Irrelevant. Any crops and stock they raise are for domestic consumption only. Then what do they mine? Damatite. They've got the only known remaining accessible supply. It's a mineral with a few limited applications, said Anakin in answer to Obi-Wan's blank look. A couple of manufacturing processes, some industrial solvents, that's about it. It used to be a lot more widely used, but times change. Obi-Wan gave him another look, one that plainly said, trust you to know. So it's this damatite that makes Lanteeb valuable? Padme shook her head.
I don't see how. A few years ago, maybe, but not these days. The applications Anakin mentioned all have damatite-free alternatives, and mostly they're preferred. Take Naboo, for instance. We still use damatite in our plasma refining plants, but we're in the minority. When it comes to the plasma industry, damatite's been almost entirely superseded by trenomite. As soon as we finish upgrading our infrastructure, we'll change over too.
Why? Said Obi-Wan. Why reject damatite if it does the job?
Checks and balances, she explained. While it's true damatite's a better product, trenomite's much easier to get hold of, which makes it cheaper, and it's more stable to work with. I'd say that within a year, those of us who still aren't using trenomite will have made the transition. Damatite's about to become obsolete.
Obi-Wan stroked his beard again.
So there's no advantage to controlling its supply?
None, said Bail.
And when the demand for damatite finally dries up, Lanteeb will be even less relevant than it is now?
I'd say that's a safe bet.
Great, said Anakin, disgruntled. So we're back where we started with no idea why Dooku would be interested in the place.
The Jedi don't have any inside information, said Bail, disappointed.
None, said Obi-Wan.
Hey, Anakin turned to him. You don't suppose...
No, said Obi-Wan. It was the first thing I thought of. Alas, we've never found a potential Jedi on Lanteeb.
Anakin slumped.
Of course we've never, because that would make this easy, and why should anything ever be easy?
So the Jedi and Lanteeb have no history?
Padme said, looking from him to Obi-Wan.
You've never been called in to sort out a local dispute, or any kind of dispute where they were involved?
Not that I can find in the archives, said Obi-Wan, shaking his head. Our records are spectacularly silent on the subject.
Anakin was frowning again.
I don't suppose there's any chance that...
No, said Obi-Wan sharply. Absolutely not. For one thing, the archives were thoroughly analyzed after what happened with Kamino. And for another, I triple-checked. There's been nothing to do with Lanteeb deleted from our databases.
I'm relieved to hear it, said Bail soberly. One security breach of that magnitude is more than sufficient.
Lashes lowered, Padme surreptitiously watched Anakin and Obi-Wan exchange discomfited looks. Aside from Dooku's defection, the tampering with their archives was the greatest blow the Jedi had received in living memory. Anakin had fretted about it for weeks. Padme, Obi-Wan shifted in his chair. What does Naboo's business relationship with Lanteeb tell you about the planet? And your extra research, Bail added. She researches everything. She's a one-woman galactic archive. She could feel Anakin's sudden leaping tension, hearing that casual reminder of how well Bail knew her.
Be careful, Anakin, and don't be silly.
Well, when I became queen, it's true that I did make a point of learning what I could about Lanteeban society. Plasma refining is crucial to Naboo's economy, and it pays to know your friends as well as your enemies. But mainly, what I turned up was a smattering of history, and I can't think of anything in Lanteeb's past that would prompt Dooku to invade it now.
Obi-Wan grimaced. At this point, I'll take whatever I can get.
Okay, she hesitated, sifting through her memory. Then sit back, children, and let me tell you a story.
Chapter 9.
Lanteeb was colonized just over 400 standard years ago by humans from Rokantor,
Padme began.
Some kind of religious or political falling out, I'm not sure exactly. You know what the Rokantori are like. They never tell you anything unless they're practically at blaster point. But I believe it's that cultural inheritance that explains Lanteeb's xenophobia.
Anakin looked at her. Rokantor's xenophobic? Why?
About 500 years ago, the humans on Rokantor were infected by a plague that jumped the species barrier from the Rokanar, the planet's original sentient inhabitants. There was massive loss of life. When the last of the funeral pyres stopped burning, the surviving Rokantor humans took over, banned all sentient non-humans from the planet.
Anakin thought about that for a moment. And what happened to the Rokanar who didn't die in the plague? She winced.
Oh dear, he's not going to like this. They were sold into slavery.
Which is indeed tragic, said Obi-Wan quickly, but hardly germane to the topic at hand. Though Anakin flicked him a dark glance, he didn't push the matter. So you're saying that because they originally came from Rokantor, the humans of Lanteeb won't have anything to do with non-humans?
Oh, they'll take their credits, she said, not bothering to sweeten her cynicism. But only from a distance. Non-humans aren't permitted to set foot on Lanteeban soil, or have any kind of financial or business interests there. Back when Damatite was highly sought after and valuable, some off-world companies did have close industry ties to Lanteeb's government, if they met the species restrictions.
That goes a long way in explaining why they weren't interested in seeking official Senate standing, said Bail. All those pesky non-humans to deal with. The Lanteeban's prejudices are culturally intriguing, if unfortunate, said Obi-Wan. But they don't shed any light on why Dooku wanted to invade. True, Bail admitted. But at least they'll tell us this much. If we want to solve the puzzle of his annexation of the planet, we'll need to rely on human investigators. Even if a non-human made it out of the spaceport, they'd attract too much attention. Obi-Wan drummed his fingers on the arm of his chair. You're thinking of infiltration? An undercover mission? Risky, I know, said Bail, his eyes grim. But it's looking more and more likely that we won't have a choice. His gaze shifted. Can you think of anything else useful, Padme? No. She was too busy being horrified by wild speculation that maybe it would be Anakin who...
Well,
she said, throttling fear.
With the reduced demand for Damatite, Lanteeb's been suffering economically for a few years now. Despite their ingrained xenophobia, some Lanteebans have grown desperate enough to go looking for work elsewhere in the Republic. From what I can tell, they mainly hire themselves out as unskilled labor, although we did have a Lanteeban engineer briefly. His permit was revoked when he couldn't take orders from the deputy chief engineer. She was Mon Cal.
Bail was frowning. So the planet's impoverished and its population is panicking. I can't imagine why Dooku didn't snap it up sooner.
Obi-Wan, are you sure you didn't miss anything in the Jedi archives?
Quite sure.
Muttering under his breath, Bail switched off the holoprojector, then ordered the study lights up again.
Okay, let's get a little crazy, shall we? Let's just start tossing ideas into the ring. Doesn't matter how ridiculous they sound, I don't care. There's something we're not seeing, some connection we've missed. There has to be a reason Dooku would expend time, energy, and resources on taking over this pointless planet.
But they couldn't come up with a single reasonable explanation. Couldn't even cobble together an unreasonable hypothesis, despite more than half an hour's intensive brainstorming.
This is ridiculous, said Bail, returning from the kitchen with four mugs of hot caff on a tray. Among us, we have more knowledge, more experience, more...
That's me, said Anakin, clapping his hand to his tunic pocket as the buzz of a comlink interrupted.
Sorry, it's probably Ahsoka with news about our wounded clones. Do you mind?
Not at all, said Bail with perfect courtesy. Answer it. I hope the news is good.
Hiding anxiety, not risking a glance at Obi-Wan, Padme watched Anakin as he slid out of the chair and wandered toward the study window, thumbing the comlink to active. His face was tight again, as though he was bracing himself for the worst.
Skywalker.
Master, it's me.
Ahsoka's thin, distant voice was slightly distorted.
I can hardly hear you, and how come I can't see you?
Finished handing around the steaming mugs, Bail put aside the emptied tray.
Anakin, if it's not a private conversation, you can plug your comlink into the holoprojector. It's got a secure comm panel with a boosted signal capacity.
Thanks, said Anakin. I'll do that.
After a bit of fiddling, Ahsoka's slight figure wavered on the holopad.
Sorry, Master. Am I interrupting something?
It doesn't matter, said Anakin, seated again, and ignoring the mug Bail had left on the arm of his chair. What's going on?
I've seen Rex and Sergeant Korok. They're not awake yet, but they look okay.
The Padawan winced.
Sort of. And I got to visit with some of the other troops, too. Nala Shan says everyone who's going to die has died, so that's good news.
Heedless of his audience, Anakin covered his face with his left hand, his organic hand, just for a moment. Then he let it drop. His eyes were bright.
That's great news, Ahsoka.
And I managed to dig up something on Lanteeb,
Ahsoka added, clearly very pleased with herself.
Do you want to hear it now? I'm alone. It's safe to talk.
Obi-Wan sat up, frowning.
Anakin?
Hold on, Padawan, said Anakin, raising a finger at hologram Ahsoka. I'm sending you dark for a minute. And he flicked the holoprojector to standby.
Bail was looking equally displeased, all his warm geniality frozen.
Master Skywalker, I was under the impression that you appreciated the sensitivity of this matter. Given that there are separatist agents spread throughout the Republic, I didn't want...
Don't you think of questioning Ahsoka's loyalty, Senator, said Anakin. I trust her with my life.
He turned to Obi-Wan.
And you can't talk either. If Dex wasn't off-world, we both know he'd be sniffing out whatever he could find on Lanteeb for you.
That's true, Bail, Obi-Wan admitted. I did try to enlist Dex's help. Now Bail was staring daggers at Obi-Wan.
What?
Obi-Wan, I thought...
Sorry, said Obi-Wan, his expression rueful. But like Ahsoka, Dex's loyalty is beyond question.
And he has ways of finding things out that make our Republic intelligence look like amateur hour. Believe me, it's a great pity he's not here.
Bail wasn't much appeased. Leaning sideways, Padme touched her fingertips to his arm.
Either you trust their judgment or you don't, Bail. And we know which one it is.
Fine, said Bail tightly. We'll take this Padawan's loyalty as a given. But what about her competence? She's practically a child.
A child who saved my life on Kothless, said Obi-Wan, gently stern. And who's acquitted herself with a maturity far beyond her years on many other occasions. Besides, no Jedi is ever truly a child.
Bail, it's all right.
And there it was. Beneath the teasing and the laughter and the spirited debates, beneath the flashes of hot temper when the debates got serious,
was the bond that Zagula had forged between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Bail Organa. Padme, watching Anakin watch them, saw him stifle surprise and reassess, in a heartbeat, the parameters of this odd friendship. Not quite relaxing, Bail nodded. Fine. With a glance at Anakin, his calf forgotten, Obi-Wan flipped the holoprojector off standby. Padawan, this is Master Kenobi. What is it you've discovered about Lanteeb? And where did you find the information?
Master Kenobi!
Ahsoka's wavering image snapped to attention.
Well...
She looked over her shoulder.
I found it in the Med Center's billing records,
she said, her voice lowered. The billing records? Anakin echoed. What made you look there?
Well, Master, I looked everywhere else that I could get into, and then, I don't know, it occurred to me to look in the financial files. I was just trying to be thorough, like you taught me.
Anakin was smiling. Nice to know you pay attention now and then, Ahsoka. What did you find?
A single reference to Lanteeb, from just over 3 standard months ago. 2 genetically coded antidotes to Damatite poisoning. Whatever that is. I looked it up in the medical database, but I couldn't find anything. The Kaminoans didn't make a huge amount of the stuff, but it still cost a fortune.
Damatite poisoning, said Obi-Wan. Padme, he looked over at her. To your knowledge, is Damatite toxic? Do your people have to take special precautions when handling it? She shook her head.
No, but the Damatite we work with is refined. I suppose it could be toxic in its unrefined state.
She felt her pulse rate pick up, felt a crawling sensation on the back of her neck.
Something nasty's brewing.
Here's what I do know, though. If you were looking for protection on a cellular level, your smart first choice would be the Kaminoans. They're at the forefront of genetic engineering and experimental medicine. I wonder, Bail said thoughtfully. Is there any way of using those genetic codes to backtrack? If we can identify the antidote's recipients, we might be able to find them, or at least use their identities to get some idea of what's going on. Possibly, said Obi-Wan. It's a good idea. Ahsoka.
I'm sorry, Master. The actual genetic information wasn't listed on the invoice. I did try to find it, but I couldn't get past the Kaminoan security blocks.
Not your fault, Padawan, said Obi-Wan. It's good you thought to try. Who ordered the antidote?
Sorry again, Master. No names were used, only reference numbers.
What about the delivery address? Said Anakin.
No, that part of the invoice was left blank.
Blast, said Obi-Wan, and tugged at his beard. I'm beginning to find these dead ends tedious. Someone's being very careful, said Bail, fingers drumming again. And organized, given that these antidotes were ordered 3 months ago. I suppose there's a chance this is all merely coincidence, but there's no such thing as coincidence, said Anakin. Just connections we haven't made yet. Bail considered him for a moment. That was very... Jedi of you. But if I could bring us back to a more practical consideration, has Damatite ever been used in any weapons applications? Not that I know. Padme?
Sorry, I don't know either. And even with its plasma refining usage, it was never listed as an active combustible or catalyst.
Bail groaned. So what does this mean? We need to do a crash course in Damatite? Anakin leaned into the compact holoprojector's transmission field. Ahsoka, did you learn anything else?
I'm afraid not, Master. But I could keep looking. Do you want me to ask Nala Shan about this Damatite?
No, said Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Bail in alarmed chorus. Ahsoka jumped.
All right. Sorry, I was only wondering.
Not a word to anyone about this, Padawan, Anakin ordered. Not even Rex when he wakes up. Secrecy is paramount. Are you sure nobody can trace where you were poking around the Med Center's databases?
I'm positive.
Be careful, Padawan, said Obi-Wan. This isn't the time for overconfidence. Hand pressed to her heart, Ahsoka stared earnestly into her own holoprojector.
I promise, Master Kenobi. I've always been good with computers.
Well done, Ahsoka, said Anakin. Now,
How do you feel about staying at the Shoals a few days more?
Of course I'll stay, Master. You won't get me out of here with a proton torpedo. Not without Rex and Korik and as many Torrent Company men as the Kaminoans will let go.
He'd been so reluctant to accept the little Togruta as his charge, convinced that he didn't want a Padawan. But looking at Anakin's face, Padme saw his pride in the child, saw genuine affection and relief that he had someone to trust with his men.
He's grown. He's changing. And it's happening without me. Every time I see him, he's more and more the man I always knew he could be, would be. And I'm not a part of it.
That hurt. I'll be in touch, Ahsoka, said Anakin, and ended the transmission. Obi-Wan stirred. What made you think to ask Ahsoka to check the Kaminoan's database?
I don't know, said Anakin, his comlink tucked back inside his tunic.
A hunch?
That made Bail smile despite the worry in his eyes.
So you don't believe in coincidence, but you'll place your faith in a hunch?
I've learned to trust my instincts, yes, said Anakin, meeting his gaze steadily. So far, they've never let me down.
And what are your instincts telling you about your Padawan's discovery?
Anakin grimaced. That we're in deep poo-doo.
A glum silence descended as they sat around the deactivated holoprojector with their gazes lowered, contemplating the baffling situation. At last, Padme looked up.
The only reason someone would need an antidote to a substance that, under normal circumstances, can be handled safely is if something's been done to it to make it unsafe.
She frowned.
Damatite poisoning. A possibly deadly medical condition caused by a reaction to a rare mineral found nowhere else but on Lantib, which has just been taken over by separatist forces. A condition that can only be treated by specifically targeted genetic manipulation that isn't listed in the database of the most scientifically and medically sophisticated culture we know.
She tapped a finger to her lips, looked at her companions, these three extraordinary men.
Stang, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
A bioweapon, said Obi-Wan, not even trying to hide his revulsion. Dooku wants to turn Lantib's Damatite into some kind of bioweapon.
With Bail Organa's blessing, they took their concerns to Yoda in private. After listening without comment, the ancient Jedi lapsed into silence, cross-legged on the meditation pad in his chamber. Small hands fisted on his knees, chin pressed into his chest, his eyes closed. He was sunk so deep within the Force, he'd almost vanished. With an effort, Anakin controlled his impatience. They had to be here. Of course they did. He wanted to be here. Whatever Dooku was up to on Lantib, he wanted to finish it. To finish him.
I just want to be with Padme more. At least I do tonight.
A few brief, paltry kisses after so long apart, it wasn't enough. It was a single sip of water offered to a man dying of thirst. He hungered for her, brutally. Kneeling beside him, Obi-Wan stirred.
Stop it. Stop thinking about her before you ruin everything, you idiot.
Yoda opened his eyes.
A darkness there is surrounding this planet Lantib. Fear, I sense. Great fear and pain. Now and to come. Right you were to bring this to my attention.
Have you any idea what's going on there, Master? Asked Obi-Wan. Do you know anything about this mineral Damatite and how it might be corrupted into a weapon?
Familiar with Damatite I am not, said Yoda. Heard of it I have, but in passing only. Certain are you, Master Kenobi, that a weapon is the danger we face?
Not certain, no, said Obi-Wan. But we couldn't come up with a more plausible explanation for why Dooku would have taken control of such a negligible planet, or why the Kaminoans would manufacture a genetically coded antidote to this mineral. Yoda stroked his chin.
Given these facts, not unreasonable is your conclusion. Already have we seen the Separatists' eagerness to develop bigger and more deadly tools of destruction. expect their hunger for slaughter to diminish. We should not.
Whatever Dooku's planning, it's obviously got the potential to be devastating, said Anakin. We have to shut him down fast.
Agreed, said Yoda, eyes narrowing. But send a battle group to Lanteeb we cannot. Already precious resources are diverted to Kothless. Impossible it is to divert more. Not until revealed the truth of Lanteeb is...
Then let us reveal it, Master Yoda, said Obi-Wan quietly. Send Anakin and me to investigate. If we're right and Dooku's developing some kind of catastrophic weapon, then either we can destroy it in place, or, if that's not possible, you can authorize a full military strike to take back the planet. Yoda hopped off his meditation mat, summoned his gimmer stick to his hand, and began pacing, head lowered again.
A dangerous mission you propose, Obi-Wan, he said at last. And intelligence agents you and young Skywalker are not.
A sharp glance.
Suggest this course of action, does Senator Organa?
Not specifically, said Obi-Wan with care. But I doubt he'd have mentioned this to me in the first place if he wasn't hoping for Jedi assistance. Yoda snorted.
Devious, that is. A politician's move.
As Obi-Wan opened his mouth to argue, Anakin caught his eye, shook his head just a little.
Let me. He might call you biased.
I don't think the Senator was being devious, Master. Given his relationship with Obi-Wan and the potential seriousness of this situation, it's not surprising he'd reach out to him, especially since he has no hard proof, only a hunch.
Said Yoda, eyes narrowed almost to closing. Head of Republic Security he is. Access to many agents he has. Use Jedi for this investigation, he need not.
Master, I understand your reservations, said Obi-Wan. But the Senator can't use regular agents for this mission. Too much is unknown and uncertain. Our Jedi abilities might be all that can make the difference between success and failure.
Yoda stopped his pacing and stared at them, his gaze fiercely intent.
But as Jedi to Lanteeb, you could not travel. False identities you would need. Behind enemy lines you would be, Obi-Wan. Spies. More dangerous than facing a droid army, that is.
Exchanging glances with Obi-Wan, Anakin nodded.
We're aware of that, Master.
And we're also painfully aware that we're neither of us trained in subterfuge the way regular Republic intel agents are. But when it's something this important, we can play our parts convincingly.
Or I can, anyway. I've had a lot of practice at subterfuge since I got married.
Sure of yourself you are, young Skywalker, said Yoda,
and started pacing again.
But not so sure am I. Thanks to the holonet, well known your faces are.
As far out as Lanteeb, said Obi-Wan, skeptical. Master Yoda, I doubt it. Yoda wrapped his gimmer stick to the marble floor.
Separatist territory is Lanteeb now. Known to every Separatist you are. Eager to capture you and Anakin is Dooku. If care for your own safety you will not, care for it I must.
What?
Anakin felt his temper flare.
Then set us to teaching younglings for the duration of this conflict, Master Yoda, because that's the only way you'll keep us safe.
Anakin, Obi-Wan murmured and touched a hand to his arm.
Master, if I thought this could be handled without our involvement, I wouldn't ask you to send us. But I don't. And Anakin is right. There is no safe place in a war.
Temper still simmering, Anakin glowered at Yoda.
I don't want special treatment because I'm supposed to be the Jedi's chosen one. Anyway, if I do have this great destiny, then I'm not going to be killed on Lanteeb, am I?
Yoda's stare chilled. He met it defiantly, daring the old Jedi to deny such an obvious truth. Beside him, Obi-Wan held his disapproving breath.
Pleased by this request, I am not, Yoda said at last. But grant it, I will. Arrange your false identities, Senator Organa, and the Special Operations Brigade can, and a way onto this planet help you devise. If an unregistered ship you require, supply that the Jedi Council will. Secret will be your mission, and whereabouts,
he sighed.
Authorized you are to leave when finished are your preparations. Dooku's weapon, if there is a weapon, You must destroy.
Obi-Wan bowed. We will, Master Yoda. As they headed for the transport that would take them back to the temple's public areas, Anakin looked sideways. So, Master Kenobi, what now? Obi-Wan stifled a yawn. It's late. I'll contact Bail and let him know what we need, then I think I'll turn in. You should get some rest, too. There's every chance this mission will prove... hectic.
Padme.
Fine, he said, working hard to sound casual. First thing tomorrow, we should pick out a suitable ship from the transport pool. Reserve it, just in case someone else needs one like it and we miss out on the perfect disguise. Yes, all right, Anakin. Aside from themselves, the corridor was empty. Obi-Wan swung around in front of him, then stopped, his expression coolly serious. Look, I know it unsettled you seeing Padme tonight, but it's happened before and it'll happen again. Like it or not, she gets herself involved in things. She's never going to be a stay-at-home senator, so it's up to you to find some way of dealing with your feelings when the two of you cross paths. With an effort, Anakin kept himself relaxed. I am dealing with them. Yes, well, by dealing with them, I don't mean being rude to Master Yoda. He didn't need Padme as an excuse to snipe at Yoda. I wasn't rude, I told him what I thought. Yes, you did, retorted Obi-Wan. Rudely. Obi-Wan, exasperated, he half turned away. It doesn't bother you when he says we're not up for the job? Anakin. Now it was Obi-Wan reaching for his self-control. That isn't what he said. He's concerned and he has a point. We aren't trained spies. We spend our lives walking through the Republic's front door, not sneaking around the back when nobody's looking. Are you having second thoughts? Obi-Wan folded his arms. No, it's just, I have a very bad feeling about Lanteeb. Which is why it's going to take us to deal with the problem, Anakin said. And then he sighed. Look, Obi-Wan, handling tricky situations is what we do. You know that, and so does Master Yoda. So why is he making a fuss about this? And why are you defending him? Instead of answering, Obi-Wan headed again for the transport. Anakin stared after him. Oh, come on! Not you too? I don't know what you're talking about, Obi-Wan muttered. Catching up to his friend in the lobby, Anakin slapped a transport call button. Yeah, right. You think I need to be protected because of the prophecy, don't you? Obi-Wan glared. If I thought that, Anakin, would I want you with me on this mission? Would I be happy to see you risking yourself day in and day out on the front lines? So you don't believe in it? I didn't say that. Shaking his head, Obi-Wan stared at the floor. Qui-Gon believed in it, and I believed in him. And there's no escaping the fact you're the most gifted Jedi the Temple has ever seen. He looked up. So if Yoda's reluctant to risk you, Anakin, it's not on a whim. He has good reason. And like I said, if the prophecy's true, I won't die on Lanteeb. Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow. Then I suppose we must hope the prophecy's true. Their transport arrived. Obi-Wan directed it to the comm center, then on to the accommodation sector. Said nothing more until they reached the temple's sprawling communications hub. So, sleep well, he said, as the transport doors swished open, and I'll see you at breakfast. Anakin nodded. Breakfast it is, but not too early. I want to enjoy a comfortable bed for as long as I can. And make up for the time I lost with Padme by being late. Say, 9? If you insist, said Obi-Wan, with the hint of a smile. Lazy bones. As the doors closed again and the conveyor zipped away, he breathed a sigh of relief, of dry-mouthed anticipation. Padme. Belay destination, he ordered. Transport pool. There was guilt, somewhere. Buried deep, not weeping too hard. He'd be leaving Coruscant within the next 2 or 3 days. This might be his only night with her, their only chance to be together in this cruelly short visit home. After tonight, the mission would come first. and at any moment she could get called away. And me? I could die. As long as we're fighting Dooku and his separatists, every sunrise could be my last. Sleep in this place, alone? Sorry, Obi-Wan. No way.
Very well, said Bail. I'll get on this immediately. You should have everything you need. Identification chips, flight plan, falsified backgrounds, within 2 days. Sooner, if we're lucky. Are you sure you're right for transportation?
Sealed into a private comm cubicle, Obi-Wan nodded. Yes, and we'll take care of our clothing requirements, too. There'll need to be some unique modifications.
Fine.
They were talking via comm panel, not holo display. Bail's face on the bright flat screen was grave, almost uncertain. Is everything all right? Bail shrugged.
Sure. Why wouldn't it be? You're only flying into a Gundark's nest on my say-so and not much else.
Though he wasn't altogether comfortable himself, Obi-Wan smiled. Well, it wouldn't be the first time.
Which might explain my trepidation. I suppose I should be flattered that a Jedi would ask how high when I say jump, but...
Bail, he said sharply. Senator or not, you don't have the power to make the Jedi do anything we don't wish to do. I told you. Yoda has said we should look into this. That should be enough for you.
You and Anakin coming back in one piece will be enough for me. Anything less than that and...
He blew out a hard breath.
Seriously, Obi-Wan, I can stop this before it starts. If you have any doubts, any kind of second thoughts, say the word and this mission is scrubbed.
He was a good man, a good friend. Bail, if you're asking whether or not I trust your instincts, the answer is yes. I trust them. I trust you. Anakin and I will be fine. We shall discover what Dooku's up to on Lantib, and we shall thwart him, and then we shall come home again. You have my word.
And I'll hold you fast to it, Master Jedi, said Bail, not quite smiling. All right, I think that's it. I'll calm you when it's time for your intel briefing. Good night. Sleep well.
You too, he said, though he suspected that neither of them would. Entering the guest accommodation wing, nodding an absent-minded acknowledgement to someone's greeting, Obi-Wan hesitated. Probably he shouldn't. He needed to stay focused, and she was unwell. She didn't need his burdens. She had too many of her own. But it had been so good to see her again. Motionless, in the airy, softly lit antechamber, he closed his eyes, reached out through the Force, delicately questing.
Taria?
Yes, there she was. Not on this floor, but close by, one level down, where the Jedi who either lived permanently in the temple or who were here for longer than a few days made their home.
Taria.
Nothing. And then, a ripple of surprise, cautious pleasure, and a definite feeling of welcome. The door to her room slid open as he approached. He entered, and it closed softly behind him. The small chamber's lights were dimmed, its air warm. Wrapped in a vibrant blue robe, she sat cross-legged on the meditation pad she'd placed between the plain, narrow bed and the other wall. Her blue-green hair, freed from its braid, spread shimmering over her shoulders and down her back like a waterfall caught out of time. Her tawny, gold eyes were too bright. Taria, he said, feeling fear and anger heat his blood. You overdid it in class today. I told you to slow down. Why don't you listen? Your remission is... precarious. She laughed.
Am I your Padawan now, Obi-Wan?
It's not funny, he said, unmollified. I wish you were my Padawan. Then I could make you mind me.
As Anakin minded you? She mocked. Tell me again how that went.
Then she relented, leaned over and patted the bed.
Don't stand there cross at me. Sit down.
He perched on the edge of the thin mattress, shamefully close to sulking. Swiveling to face him, she reached out and pressed her cool hand to his forehead.
You're so sad, she murmured. So weary. Deep down in your bones, this blasted war.
She stroked his hair, fingers skimming.
And now you're leaving again. Where are you going?
Of course she'd sense it.
He let his eyes drift closed. How strange it felt to be touched with tenderness. His life was so brutal now, loud and bloody and full of pain. I can't say, he whispered. I would if...
No, she said. It's all right. Can you say when?
Her hand moved without ceasing. Her touch woke memory, stirred sorrow. Soon.
You and Anakin?
Yes.
You're frightened.
Never, ever did he pretend with Taria. A little. Her small chamber smelled sweet. So did she. Her palm came to rest against his cheek. He felt himself lean into it, felt something inside him give or break.
Sleep, she said. I'll watch over you. You'll be safe. No bad dreams.
He opened his eyes. No, you're not well. I can't take your bed.
Obi-Wan.
Her generous lips curved in a wry smile.
No matter where you are tonight, I won't be sleeping.
Because she never ever pretended with him either, not when it counted. She let him feel her encroaching disease, took his face between her hands and pressed her thumb tips to his closed eyes, making sure his tears could not fall.
It's not your fault. You didn't do this. Sleep.
So he pulled off his boots and eased out of his clothing and crawled exhausted into her bed. She sat beside him on her meditation pad, breathing gently, then sang to him until he slept. In the morning, when he woke, he was alone. Chapter 10. Bail calmed late the next afternoon, much sooner than expected. Ready. Come plain clothes. Accompanying the curt command were coordinates for a meeting place, somewhere far less conspicuous than either the temple or Bail's Senate office. Obi-Wan and Anakin took a speeder from the transport pool, programmed the onboard nav computer with their destination, and trusted the autopilot to get them there in one piece. It took almost an hour. In the end, there proved to be a dingy, tenantless office block on the outskirts of the rundown and poorly populated Barine industrial sector.
Gentlemen, said the thin, nondescript woman in the building's open ground floor doorway.
She was dressed in the shabbiest gray tunic and trousers, and her gray hair was scraped back from her angular, unadorned face in an ugly rat's tail.
Follow me.
Obi-Wan exchanged a look with Anakin, who nodded. There was something unsettling about the woman's demeanor. But if Bail trusted her... She led them to an equally dingy upstairs office where Bail was waiting for them. Clad in a baggily, ill-fitting brown suit and scuffed, badly worn shoes, with his hair greased down and his fingernails dirty, he looked like he'd be turned away from his own apartment complex. Beneath the carefully applied grunge, he was hollow-eyed with weariness, as though he'd worked through the night and still hadn't stopped. Which had to be the case, surely, for him to have achieved such swift results. Nice outfits, he greeted them, turning away from the partially boarded window with the faintest shadow of a smile. Very un-Jedi. Obi-Wan looked down at his threadbare woolen overshirt and patched trousers. So, they're plain enough for you?
That was my stipulation,
said the still unidentified woman, closing the paint-peeled office door behind her.
This isn't an area known for its Jedi visitors.
I sense that, said Anakin, pulling his lightsaber from inside his own faded jacket and laying it on the room's battered conference table. Bail glanced from Anakin to the nondescript woman. A perceptive man, he could feel the undercurrent of tension humming between them. Master Kenobi, Master Skywalker, this is Agent Varric from the Special Operations Brigade, he said, deliberately pleasant. She's taking point on the Lanteeb mission. Agent Varric, Masters Kenobi and Skywalker, two of the best Jedi in the Republic.
Yes, Senator, said Agent Varric with a brisk nod. I know who they are, and I'm aware of their reputations and their exploits.
The woman was almost overtly hostile, her distaste for the Jedi scraping his nerves and Anakin's unpleasantly. Puzzled, Obi-Wan looked at Bail. Was it something we said? But before Bail could diplomatically intercede, Anakin took a step sideways, away from the conference table. Opened space between himself and the agent, his face was calm, his eyes hotly focused.
And when you say aware... Obi-Wan flicked a warning glance at Bail, raised his hand just a little.
I've got this.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Agent Varric. Your assistance with this mission is greatly appreciated by us and the Jedi Council. Pinch-lipped, the agent nodded again.
We all serve the Republic, Master Kenobi.
And your service might well help to avert disaster.
Thank you.
He held the woman's gaze, showing her nothing but sincerity, feeling Anakin's resigned annoyance. For all his efforts, his former Padawan never had developed a taste for pouring honey on a sour situation. Anakin tended to prefer a blunter approach.
Well, not this time, my young friend. Not when we need her more than she needs us.
Agent Varric relaxed, fractionally, the smallest hint of retreat.
You're welcome.
He smiled. Are we to understand you've prepared the documentation we'll require to infiltrate Lanteeb?
I have.
She reached beneath the conference table and retrieved a plain, inconspicuous workcase.
Perhaps we might be seated and get this taken care of. I'm sure we're all busy with other places to be.
She glanced sideways.
Senator?
Yes, of course, said Bail, taking the nearest cracked leather chair. Master Kenobi, Master Skywalker, Agent Varric is an identification specialist, he added as they sat. You can be sure your new personas will withstand the most rigorous separatist scrutiny. They'd better, Anakin muttered, seeing as how our lives are going to depend on them. Agent Varric looked at him, dispassionate.
Your lives are perfectly safe with me. This isn't my first nerf muster, Teeb Markle.
Anakin came close to sneering. Catchy name. Uncomfortably aware of Bail's dismay, Obi-Wan tugged at his tunic, snared Anakin's gaze with his own, and held it hard.
Please, let's not do this.
Anakin's jaw tightened, his eyes sharp with temper, and then he capitulated and looked away. Oblivious or uncaring, Agent Varric opened the workcase and withdrew two sealed packets.
Teeb, she said, handing him and Anakin one each, her tone lecturing. Is the official designated honorific for any legally adult male Lanteeban. The equivalent female honorific is Teeba. Teeb Markle and Teeb Yavid, that would be you, Master Kenobi, are cousins. Farmers who lost the family holding after a prolonged drought put them into debt. They, you, are returning home to Lanteeb after working a three-season forestry laborer's contract on Alderaan. You hail from the village of Voteb, on the northernmost tip of the settled Lanteeban continent.
Obi-Wan frowned at her. I don't understand. I thought our knowledge of Lanteeb was severely limited.
It is,
said Agent Varric.
But there really are two Lanteeban cousins named Markle and Yavid. They have helped us prepare for this mission.
That's impressive, said Anakin with a grudging admiration. How did you manage to find these men? And so fast. Bail shrugged. Sheer luck, Master Skywalker. Senator Amidala's comment about the Lanteeban engineer got me thinking. Alderaan hires a lot of off-planet workers in the forests and the general agricultural regions. We're a popular destination for contract labor. The pay and conditions are good, and an Alderaanian reference opens many other doors. Fortunately, our Ministry of Employment keeps meticulous records. It was a long shot, but I thought it was worth checking to see if we had any Lanteebans currently on the books. Another shrug. Once I was apprised of the cousin's work status on Alderaan, I pulled the requisite strings and had them brought in. To help, said Obi-Wan carefully. He looked from Bail to Agent Varric. And when you say help, Bail sat a little straighter. I mean help. He said, and suddenly he was wearing his haughty politician's face, the princely face of a man who resented being questioned or doubted. No strings attached, and when they finished assisting us, they were returned to their forestry camp.
Which, in my opinion, was a grave tactical error, Agent Varric murmured. If they changed their minds.
Pass up asylum and protected Alderaanian immigrant status, said Bail. That's not likely. Agent Varric, you've already lost this argument. Drop it.
Senator,
said Agent Varric, her eyes going blank. Obi-Wan cleared his throat. So you're saying these Lanteebans are free of further government interference? That's right. A glance at Agent Varric showed him what she thought of that.
"Surely it would have been less problematic simply to fabricate identities for us?" he asked.
"How?" said Agent Varric sourly. "When, as you yourself pointed out, Master Kenobi, our knowledge of Lanteeb is as good as non-existent."
Stang. He didn't have an answer for that. "So," said Anakin, "these cover identities, you're sure they'll hold up for the duration of our mission?" Agent Varric nodded curtly.
"We are. Voteb is one of Lanteeb's remotest villages. The chances of you stumbling across anyone in the city who knows the real cousins, or is familiar enough with their home to ask awkward questions, are negligible at best."
"Looks that way," said Anakin and turned. "I think Senator Organa's right, Obi-Wan. We got lucky. Without all this inside information, I doubt we could make it onto Lanteeb. And better yet, nobody we run across is going to be scared or suspicious of a couple of farmers." Lucky or not, he didn't like it. Not at all. Not that he didn't trust Bail or disbelieved his friend when he said the men were in no danger. That was the truth. They were in no danger from Bail Organa, one of the only two honorable politicians he knew. But that didn't mean they were totally safe. Agent Varric's disapproval of their freedom was proof of that.
"And while Bail is powerful, is he powerful enough to override the son of a Sith if they should push Palpatine for a change in the status of these Lanteeban cousins? I think he is. I hope he is. But can I be sure?"
Bail was staring at him steadily, a challenge in his eyes. "It's done, Master Kenobi. Let's move on, shall we?" Unhappy, Obi-Wan ran his fingers over the unopened info packet Agent Varric had given him.
"This wretched war. And to think, I used to complain whenever Qui-Gon bent the rules even a little bit."
"Master Kenobi," said Bail insistent, wary, "do we have a problem?" He looked up.
"Yes."
"No, Senator." He pushed the info packet aside. "We are indeed fortunate that these cousins were available to assist us."
"Your ship's new registry, your personal identichips, and your full bios are in those packets," said Agent Varric,
unmoved by the continuing tension in the dusty room.
"Along with pertinent notes on Lanteeb and the spaceport's layout, rules, and regulations. Don't lose the chips, and destroy the bios and briefing notes once you've memorized them. If anyone on Lanteeb questions your accents, make sure you stress you've been away from home for some time and you've picked up some alien inflections. Most importantly, don't talk about the great non-human friends you made on your travels. Do that, and you'll attract all the wrong kind of attention. I'm told you're arranging your own transport."
"Don't worry, we took care of that this morning," said Anakin. "Although," he frowned, "if we're farmers turned forestry workers, how do you explain us having our own ship?"
"You won it in a game of chance," said Agent Varric, and sniffed. "And learn to fly it in your free time. This vessel you've chosen, it's nothing too flashy, I hope."
Obi-Wan flicked another warning glance at Anakin. "Don't rise to her bait." "On the contrary, Agent. It would, for example, attract no attention in this neighborhood."
"Make and model?"
"Hey," said Anakin, scowling. "This isn't my first Nerf muster either, Agent. I grew up around tramp transports and shady operators, which means I know a thing or two about flying under the sensors."
"Of course,"
said Agent Varric, her lips thinning into an ungenerous smile.
"You grew up on Tatooine, the perfect preparation for a life of skullduggery."
Anakin smiled back, just as unamused. "Yeah, it was. You know, I'm surprised I never saw you there." Instead of biting back, Agent Varric nodded at Anakin's lightsaber, ostentatious in the office's shabby surrounds.
"You know you can't take that thing with you."
"Excuse me?" Anakin flexed his fingers, and the lightsaber leapt to his loving hand. "That's not your decision." Something close to contempt flitted over the woman's harsh face.
"Don't be a fool. If you get caught with a Jedi weapon, you'll be shot dead on the spot. You'll have blown any chance of your mission succeeding, or of anyone else following you to finish what you started."
This time, Anakin's smile was dangerous.
"Then I guess it's a good thing I won't get caught, isn't it?"
"So, I think that's all we need from you, Agent Varric," said Bail, standing. "The Supreme Chancellor appreciates your assistance, as do I. And please remember this is a coded operation. Compartmentalize as per protocols and discuss it with me and me alone."
Of course, Senator,
said Agent Varric, her expression smoothing to a cool, dispassionate competence.
Happy to be of service, as always.
After she was gone, Bail dropped back into his chair, ran a hand over his face, then leaned his elbows on the conference table, letting his polished politician's mask slip to reveal the man who lived behind it. Don't say it, Obi-Wan. Just don't. I wasn't going to, he retorted. As you so rightly pointed out, it's done. And given our distressing lack of options, there's no way to undo it. Exactly. Although I seem to recall you saying only a few hours ago that if I had any second thoughts... I know what I said, said Bail, glowering. But it's not the mission you doubt, is it? Only my ability to protect those Lantibans from Varric's overenthusiasm. Is that what you call it? Anakin cleared his throat. Hey, are you saying that you trust her to take no for an answer? Obi-Wan retorted. Bail, I've only just met the woman, and I can tell that she... will not be a problem, Bail insisted, his voice rising, because I will not permit her to be a problem, even though all she wanted to do was